This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, and we've hashed over just about every different way you can the Astros sign-stealing saga, so maybe it was inevitable we were going to get back to the point of how it was revealed. Is Mike Fears a snitch? Apparently becomes one of the talking points today, Paul, in part because of what David Ortiz had to say.
Yeah, he had some really interesting comments. I think some people might hear them and think to themselves, well, Poppy, weren't you on the juice when you were playing baseball? But I do think that there is actually a point in what he did actually say.
I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher that came out talking about it, and let me tell you why. Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of? Oh, now. So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean? Why you got to talk about it after? Well, that's my problem, you know. Why nobody say anything while it was going on?
He got a ring. He didn't say anything about it then. He didn't say anything about it until recently. And I do think it's interesting that he waited that long.
In part because he's mad, right? Like the Astros didn't keep him around. There's a little bit of bitterness. And for Fear's part, he talked about this. He has also mentioned that he's gotten death threats. And there's no doubt that there's a lot of anger that is focused on him in Houston. Here was a quote that he gave to The Athletic, quote, I said from the beginning, I'm not away from this. I was part of that team. I was one of those guys, Fears said. Suspensions, fines, I'm willing to take as much punishment as they do. They ask me to, and then return the ring is what, it's not the end of the world. So he acknowledges that he benefited or was part of the team that benefited from it. What I think is interesting is this question of, is it a snitch or is it whistleblowing? And we generally, I kid about snitches getting stitches, but there's a part of me that does believe that tattling is not just annoying, but it's kind of like worry about your own business. On the other hand, that's how problems get fixed. So as much fun as it is to say like, hey, you just worry about yourself and you don't, like at some point, if you want wrongdoing to stop, you end up having to rely on people who are in some ways betraying people that they've worked with before. I mean, it's how whistleblowing works is someone raises their hand and say, hey, I'm seeing something going on that I want to stop. And Fears, in some respects, he is a whistleblower. Yet I know that there are also people that react to him being a snitch.
Isn't whistleblowing supposed to be done as a preventative measure? Because ultimately, he did not prevent anything.
There's a halting that goes on. Yes, it would be to stop something, and I think that
preventing
the question
future cheating.
Right. That it would be an
or in the moment
question of he could have spoken up when it was happening. I don't think anybody disputes that. Anybody could have spoken up when it was happening. Nobody did. Is it right 2 years after the fact to bring it to light if it was still going on in some regard? And I would say this, that what Fears has done will prevent future incidences of this. Like, there's going to be safeguards going forward about video rooms and live video streams. If baseball doesn't, baseball is absolutely stupid. And I don't think that it's not that I think that they're not dumb. They won't subject themselves to this embarrassment again. So in some ways, it does prevent future cheating. But you're right, Paul. Like, it's whistleblowing is in some measure to stop something that's happening. This is about addressing something that was done wrong several years ago.
You do have to put yourself in his shoes and wonder how you would act in that situation when you are a part of this team, when you are a part of this clubhouse, and it's the 2017 season, and you're on your way to winning a World Series. Maybe you aren't pitching in the playoffs. Fires was on the 40-man roster, but he did not actually pitch in the 2017 Astros World Series run. So he was basically there sitting. He gets his ring. Yeah, in the moment, it never seemed like it was an issue. Clearly, it wasn't an issue enough for him to speak up. It feels like this was a big problem for all of the Astros, is that there might have been some guys who had reservations, but none of them spoke up in a way that stopped the actual act from happening again. And none of them also spoke up in a way or hinted in a way that, hey, Kamish, look what's going on here. Maybe someone should step in. He did it after the fact. And I understand why. I mean, if you do it while you're with this team, how are you going to get a job with another team? As opposed to when you're somewhere else and you're saying these things, there aren't really the same kind of consequences. You could still earn a living. You still have a job. And those are some of the drawbacks to doing something along those lines. So there is some bravery in what Fires did. It's just, why didn't he do it a couple of years before? And that's why I look at that Poppy point, and I think there's some credence to what he said.
Yes, it would have been more effective had he done it. It would have been, and he probably would feel better about himself now if he had done that, although he wouldn't have the World Series ring. It's easier to do it when you don't have anything at stake.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to say it, right? It's much easier to do it when you're no longer part of the team, and not only that, you have some hard feelings against the team. I think it's wrong that we demonize snitching. I think believing and even using that terminology of saying someone is a snitch, I think it's wrong. And I say that as someone who openly jokes about it. It's not
it's a funny
wrong
term.
It's not wrong
it's not
to tell
a funny
the
act.
Truth. And the idea that tattletale or that idea, there's a difference between just pointing out the indiscretions of others and actually pointing out a problem. And if it comes down to it, you're always best off telling the truth. And I think that the sentiment that David Ortiz is presenting is, it's part of demonizing people who tell the truth in that you criticize the way that they tell the truth. He waited too long. Why is he speaking out? He didn't like all of the different ways that we say to that you don't have a business saying that. It's because that person has presented an inconvenient or uncomfortable truth. And rather than deal with the implications of that, we tend to point to the person who made the observation and their credibility rather than the nature of it.
It's so baseball because we hear, oh, that's not the right way to play the game all the time. And now we're hearing that's not the right way to tell the truth. Oh,
it's so true. That's not the right way to snitch.
Come on. That's not how I was raised to tell the truth.
That's not how I was raised to tattletale. I would tell on Sarah right after it happened so that I could gain favor from my parents. Yeah, it's strange the way that it's been talked about. And I mean, and it goes back to the ultimate first part of all of this, the unwritten rule of baseball where this was happening. This was apparently a thing. The sign stealing is illegal, but you can do it unless you use electronic technology. And that's where we got into this gray area. But with the way that everyone is acting after the fact, it's such a big issue. And it's something that is never going to go away. From the Astros, for sure. From baseball, I doubt it, too. It's going to take some time for this one to be in the rearview mirror.
Larry Stone has a column in today's Seattle Times, and he talked to Kyle Seager, whose brother was part of the LA Dodgers team that lost to the Astros in the World Series. And Kyle's pretty understated. Kyle's not someone who comes out and thumps his chest and says they deserve beatings like Nick Markakis did. But he makes it clear that we knew what was going on. That there were references about the trash can being banged. And he said him being at third base, he couldn't often hear it, that it wasn't right. And you get the sense that people in baseball have known it's happening. The reason it hasn't become public is kind of that code of silence. Or you let things, maybe there's a couple of sideways references. I think that idea of how do you stop something that's going on? Or how did that get to go on? I think is a really interesting idea and psychological phenomenon. Because in some ways, Mike Fears is the one that comes out of this. If he has gotten threats and is feeling, he might be the player that ends up suffering the most out of this. Out of all of these guys, they're going to bear the mark in shame, but they're not going to lose any time. And it's Fears that's going to be considered by guys like Ortiz as like, he's the guy that spoke out of school.
Which is hilarious because the entire league should have been tattletales. The entire league knew about this. At least that's what everyone's been writing about. After the fact, and yet no one did anything. And what's funny is the guy who actually won something out of this is the person that's like, yeah, I can't stomach this anymore. I'm very curious as to what made him ultimately decide that he needed to get this off of his chest. Because over 2 years after the World Series was won, that's when we hear it. It took that long to get out. I'm very curious as to that side of things.
Does his motivation matter? I'm curious,
no,
too,
I'm just,
but does it matter?
I just want to know. I don't think it matters at all, though. Look, if you feel bad about it and you felt like you needed to get it off of your chest, maybe he's a Catholic and he felt compelled.
But if he didn't do anything, if he wasn't one of the people participating in it, he just saw that it was happening. The biggest problem for baseball, Other than the fact that a team that won the World Series was using TV cameras and trash cans. Other than that fact, the biggest problem for baseball is that this was a problem that teams complained about. And it took someone going to the press and making a big scandal for baseball to take care of it. This tells you that baseball regulating and policing itself doesn't work. Teams complained. The A's, Bob Melvin said he complained. Kyle Seager said a dozen teams complained to baseball about what the Astros were doing, and nothing stopped it. And it took public humiliation and shame to move baseball to take action.
And once again, it falls on Manfred. Rob Manfred has no excuses here. Rob Manfred, honestly, is the reason that everything has exploded the way that it did. He sent the memo out cute, neat. That was not nearly enough.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time for What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Hey, tell me if you heard this one before. The Washington Huskies playing relatively competitive. They're going okay. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they can't score at all. 8.5 minutes without a field goal. They lose by 8 points to Stanford. Ninth straight loss. It matches the second longest losing streak in school history.
You said it was going to end, though.
Yeah, it's got to eventually. Maybe next time against Cal, they'll take on the Jared Haas-coached Cal Bears.
Eventually, the losing streak will end. Go Dawgs!
It's got to, right? Eventually, this team. this team.
I feel bad for Mike Hopkins because, again, Cuse Mafia, what's up? But at the same time, like,
I feel bad for him. Like, come on. You're the coach. Get them together.
It's not his fault. I mean, they're not Cuse athletes. UW. It's like going down a step or two.
No. These are his kids. He's recruited most of them. This is his pile of doo-doo. Like, I don't want to change, but, like, I don't feel bad for Hopkins. Like, I feel bad for Husky fans like myself being forced to watch this dreck.
Oh, poor little Danny. Oh, wait, Huskies are not playing too well. Oh.
They're terrible.
What to watch for.
Ramrod. I like that word. That's what the NFL is apparently trying to do with the NFL Players Association. They basically said publicly that they have come to a collective bargaining agreement proposal that is the truth. And the NFL players are all of a sudden last night saying, what you talking about? You got J.J. Watt, you got Tyler Lockett, you got Richard Sherman standing up and saying no to it. I got to say, though, Danny, at first glance, with a lot of the checklist items that I think the NFL Players Association wanted resolved, the NFL actually did make a lot of concessions here. The ultimate problem, I think, is going to be the split of money.
It's 48.5% to the players under a 17-game schedule. 48% if it's just a 16-game schedule. And
up from 47%.
Right. Owners are still getting the majority of it. I think there's also issues of how they calculate that. More than anything, the NFL is pushing very hard to get this done because I think they then want to take their new broadcast contract to market and say, we've got 10 years of labor peace, and we're going to sell this. And I think the players are wondering how much those broadcast deals are going to be worth and whether them making a concession earlier and agreeing to the contract, if they should get a higher percentage rather than just get a slightly bigger slice and not quite half of the overall pie.
Yeah, you should get a little bit more of a percentage on that. Just think about it from this perspective. Do a little math here. 17 divided by 16. So we're talking about essentially, about 6.5% more revenue over the course of a season. And the players are, it seems like, going to get not more of that percentage. It seems like the split, like the extra percentage that they're going to get, isn't anywhere close to what the owners are going to get. So you look at just that part of it, and again, I'm not going to act like I know all the specifics of this CBA, but it is something that I feel like is kind of common sense. They are not getting as much as they should if they are going to make that concession to play one more game.
What to watch for.
Mitch Haniger is trying very hard to look on the bright side, Paul. This is a guy who, after getting hit by a pitch, suffering a ruptured testicle.
Oh, God.
Has now undergone three different surgeries, including two of them within the past month. Most of the signs that he is expected to play again for the Mariners. He's expected to play again this season. But that question of when he's going to be available, and look, he's lost some muscle mass. He's trying to come back. Here he is talking about sort of why he ended up, what he was, it's the frustrations he's dealt with recovering from this injury.
Kick yourself, you think, you know, what could have been done differently, but at the end of the day, I had, leading up to the surgeries, I had a really good offseason, and, you know, I kind of, talking to my wife and trainers and the guys here, I was like, look, man, like, I was killing it this offseason with a herniated disc and a torn adductor, not knowing it, and putting up some really good numbers. So the way I choose to look at it is like, you know, what am I going to be capable of when I'm actually healthy?
I hate the word testicle. You brought it up a little bit ago. I can't get past it. I'm sorry. I've been rattled, Danny. I hate that word. Hate it. I absolutely hate it. It just makes me cringe every single time I hear it. I'd rather hear like the slang term for it. That's my thought on the matter. You're welcome.
It's time for the Morning Drive with the Professor John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, what's going on?
Well, plenty of stuff. Lots of stuff.
When you have the CBA that the owners seem to be trying to force down the players' throats, is the NFLPA really signed off on this?
Yes. They signed off on it several weeks ago. And this has been 10 months of negotiations, so the Players Association is on board on this one. The problem is the players aren't.
So, Demaryius Smith, the NFLPA head, that's kind of why we haven't heard much from him. They're okay with this, and it's some of the players.
They agreed
themselves.
To it, yeah. That's why, I mean, you know, this is a two-way agreement. This is not one where they're shoving it down the throats of the Players Association. The Players Association spent 10 months negotiating this with the owners, and this is what they came up with.
Well, there's supposed to be a vote, right?
Yes, today there's supposed to be a vote.
It sounds like you're expecting the vote to pass.
No, I think it's going to go down. I think it's going to go down hard. They didn't have the votes 3 weeks ago at the Super Bowl, and they don't have the votes now. And so, because remember, what you first have to do, and again, unless they change the rules, which I can't imagine they would, is that you have to have two-thirds of the executive board. That's 11 players, and I don't think they have the votes there. And then you have to have two-thirds of the 32 teams and the player reps, and I don't think they have those votes. Now, if it goes to the players, they may get a 50-50 vote on that, and that's where they would have a chance. But if you don't have the two-thirds, then I think it's going to get voted down.
What's the big holdup right now?
17 games. That's what the big holdup is. That's what's so curious about this is that how can the union, you know, negotiate a 17-game contract without the support of the players? That's the thing that is so baffling about this. You know, and that because what it comes down to is that you know, for all these months, what the owners have been trying to get and you know were able to get with the union was a 17-game schedule because there's so much more money involved. You're talking about probably $1.8 billion a year. In additional revenue, you're talking about a lot more, you know, things that the players get back in return. But the problem is that I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, if this goes and gets voted down, what's the owners going to do? I mean, what they could do is do the 16 game. But this is what the union has negotiated.
Now, with the union, would it decertify? Like what? The NFLPA is supposed to represent the players.
That's correct.
And this would be the players essentially rejecting the bargaining of their own union. Does it mean that you're going to have a massive turnover of union officials? Do they decertify the union? I don't understand what would happen if the Players Association agrees to a deal that the rank and file doesn't support.
Yeah, well, I mean, then it just gets voted down, and then the thing that will end up happening if they can't come up with something quick, which they probably can't, is that the president of the union, Eric Winston, will, you know, he's going to be done in another month when they have their meeting back sometime in March, and there's going to be a new union president. Now, as far as the executive director, that's still going to end up being Demaryius Smith. That's not going to change, and the union's not going to decertify or anything of that nature. I mean, we'll see where it goes if there's going to be prolonged negotiations on something. But at this stage, I mean, if this is voted down, what will happen is that, you know, the existing CBA is going to continue for this year and this year only. And then we'll see where negotiations can go for 2021.
All right, Professor, let's get to a little personnel news. Everson Griffin's going to opt out of his contract with the Vikings. How valuable is he going to be on the open market?
I think pretty valuable. I mean, again, he's not going to get, I think, big money because of his age. But I think that very much in this, in the vote of the Greg Olsen deal, I mean, he's going to get something. There's no question about it because he's a good player and he still wants to stay with the Minnesota Vikings. So it's not out of the question that they can work out something there. But I think he's a viable candidate for Seattle.
How much of a red flag would the incidents that took place in September of last, of 2018 be when it comes to bringing him aboard? Because there were some incidents all in a row that were very interesting, given that Griffin at the time was viewed as one of the leaders of the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had some mental issues that apparently he's taken care of, and where there was major questions back in 2018, he answered them in 2019 and was a valuable member of the team that went to the playoffs. And so it looks like those things are behind him, and he had a Pro Bowl caliber season, and so you know, that's now on behind him now.
Other top free agent pass rushers, Yannick Ngakoue, we expect to be franchise tagged. Matthew Judon probably is as well. Jadeveon Clowney is going to probably get the biggest contract. Are those the top four pass rushers you think will be available?
Yeah, then you start to look at Fowler, Derek. I mean, you know, it'd be Fowler and with the Rams, and then you start to look at some of the other guys that are going to be out there. But those will be the main guys. But then, you know, that's why the value of the franchise tag is going to probably, you know, hold some guys back. Now remember, if this thing doesn't pass today, you have the ability for teams to put the transition tag on too, because you can do a franchise and a transition, and that's going to probably water down the market a little bit more. But what I think is interesting is that it's not a real good draft, it looks like, up top for pass rushers, for edge rushers, because I don't have any going in the top 12 right now, and so, you know, that doesn't bode well. And so it's not, in fact, that's one of the weaker areas in this draft. So that's why free agency is going to be so important, and the value of guys in free agency so important.
I read something yesterday that once this CBA does go down, and maybe it won't in the near future, but a lot of moves are going to be made, potential releases and cuts. Are there any that you have been hearing that could be available, maybe from a pass rusher's perspective, that would be surprising?
I doubt it. We know, and although he's not a pass rusher, Snacks Harrison, the defensive tackle, is getting released by Detroit. That's going to be one. But, you know, most of the ones are going to be, you know, reasonably predictable, because they're either older guys that are at a high cap number, or there's just a need for cap room. So, that's why at least there are some, that's a pretty good list. I mean, Eric Armstead, if he doesn't get franchised, is going to be available. But he's a free agent. But, there may be some, but not many, as far as being released.
Professor, I have a favorite fact from the Greg Robinson arrest. Do you have any specifics? I've now read the arrest report. He was arrested with 157 pounds of weed.
Yeah, get it right.
Do you have a favorite fact, or do you want me to give you my favorite fact?
No, I'll take yours.
My favorite fact is that while being pulled over at the border checkpoint, his phone, along with the passenger he was riding with, who was another previous NFL player who I'd never heard of, his last name was Bray, they had their cell phones were there as they're being questioned, and they were getting text messages that could come through, and one came from a contact that was listed as, quote, grow house indoor, end quote.
Grow house indoor?
That's correct.
I'll never guess who that is.
His grow house, the person who was growing the marijuana that he was transporting, which it would appear, scrolled across his cell phone while he was being questioned by the Border Patrol with 157 pounds of weed in his car.
Nice.
Very inconspicuous. Come on.
Don't you get the feeling that he's going to be blocking in jail for a long period of time?
Yeah. Professor, we appreciate your time. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
That is the Professor John Clayton. You can hear him from 10 to noon. Coming up next, do you ever get suspicious when your boss is really trying to get you to accept a new deal? Like, really trying to get you to accept it? Because that's kind of what it feels like is happening here. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll talk about that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I don't know if any NFL players are losing their mind, per se, over the most recent NFL CBA proposal. But they don't seem to be too happy about it based off of the Twitter reactions of J.J. Watt, of Tyler Lockett, and of Richard Sherman. The NFL seems to think this is going to be done very soon. I don't know why they approach things the way that they do, but I'm assuming that they feel like they, by putting pressure in the public about having reached a CBA that would give the players a lot of things that they've been asking for and more money, that maybe public perception will turn against players. This does happen a lot. When you spend a lifetime, Danny, doing something in exchange for money every now and then, you're probably going to get the short end of a deal. And sometimes we don't have the leverage to say no to it, even when we know we are getting the short end of a deal. But I look at what the NFL is putting out there publicly, and there's probably a reason for this. There are a lot of things that NFL players wanted that they are giving to these players.
Yes. Discipline moves away from Roger Goodell. It's no longer his sole discretion. There's an actual neutral arbiter that's going to make some of those decisions. Players are no longer going to be suspended for testing positive for marijuana, for THC. In fact, the threshold for what constitutes a positive test is going significantly higher, and any punishment would only be a fine. You're not going to have someone that gets suspended for testing positive for a drug that is now legal in a number of states.
Right. You'd have to be arrested to actually get suspended. The threshold has gone up in a huge amount. Like, we're talking about about four times as much as it was before. And on top of that, there's only going to be a 2-week stretch where these players are drug tested for marijuana. And it's going to take place right before the start of training camp. So basically, as opposed to it being from April to throughout the entire year, now it is just going to be 2 weeks. So basically, once this 2-week stretch is done, I suppose puff away if you want. And then on top of that, each roster is going to get 2 extra active roster spots and 2 extra practice squad spots. So that means 4 more jobs per team. 4 times 32. We're talking about, what, 128 new jobs in the NFL? So there are a lot of things that you look at and you say, okay, if I'm a player, I don't really have a whole lot of leverage here. There are a lot of things here that I like.
If your boss is being very aggressive about getting you to accept a new job assignment, a new deal, something new in your working arrangement, and they're being not only a year out in front, but they're being very like, hey, let's get this done, I immediately start to get suspicious. I'm always like, okay, what exactly am I giving away here? Why exactly? Because you're making the commitment as a worker. The only leverage you ever have as a worker is to withhold service, right? To either go and work for somebody else or to say, I'm not going to go to work anymore. And when you get to the end of a collective bargaining agreement, when you're part of a union, it's your one opportunity. You've got this one bite at the apple to improve or change your working conditions. If I was an NFL player, I would look at it and say that they're rearranging the deck chairs without changing the fundamental underlying relationship between how much money we make. We're getting a small sliver of an increase of the overall pie at a time that the overall pie is growing and they're asking more from us. We're getting a 0.5%, which is not an insignificant amount. It's $500 million in a year split between all the players. It's $5 billion over the course of the 10-year CBA. But I think if I was a player, the thing I would be most interested or concerned about is that what is their next TV rights deal going to be worth?
Yep.
And if we do this right now, if we do this a year out from the CBA expiration, we're going to allow them to shop for a new rights deal. We're making a concession. We're saying, okay, we're not going to take it up to the 11th hour to try and get as much as we can. We'll give you labor security. In exchange, the NFL is going to get a significantly, they're going to be in great negotiating position for what could be a revolutionary rights deal where you have streaming involved.
Mm-hmm.
You have Twitter. You have Amazon. There are a lot of different things. The NFL has its own TV network now. Like, all of these different things. You don't know the size of that. And if you're not only adding a 17th game, but you're giving up in a year in advance your opportunity to make significant changes, is that worth more than a 0.5% bump?
It's worth well more than that. I mean, think about it from this perspective. By playing a 17th game, theoretically, you are creating about a 6.25% increase in total revenue. all of that is because the players would be agreeing to playing an extra game. And the increase in the percentage is only going up 1%. Honestly, I feel like it should be as close to 50-50 as possible. Maybe NFL owners are too stubborn to do something like that. But when you are going to concede a something like that, you would think that is how things go. But the problem is these guys don't have leverage. And I mean, to bring up a personal example for me, you know, in radio, when I got my first hosting job in Houston doing nights, I was not given as much money as I wanted. In fact, I was not given any benefits or anything either. But I had no leverage. I had no legs to stand on. It was like, all right, you take the job or we're going to find somebody else. And for a lot of these players, you take this so that you can get paid, or you're going to sit out and other people are going to reap the benefits of you sitting out. And do you really want to be a martyr for a guy who is playing 2-3 years from now? Screw that. Like, I wouldn't want to. I'm selfish. I'm all about me. I'm all about my family. I don't care about the guys that are coming after me. I'm going to take what is presented in front of me. And that's the unfortunate thing for these players. There are only a set amount of stars that can really afford to just sit back. And I know that they've been telling players, hey, listen, save your money, be careful with your money, but it ain't that easy. It really isn't. You think that you're going to have something coming to you for a couple of seasons and then all of a sudden it's just pulled away from you? Well, what happens if you made payments down the road and things like that? You're in a tough situation.
The 860 has texted in and said, hey, this is the done deal. And from one perspective, the NFLPA, with the reports that they've signed off on it, that this is the deal that they negotiated and agreed to. That's right. This should be going for, and it should be a formality. And it says it's going to get voted on and passed. They caved to more money. I know that's what's going to happen. And all they need is 51% of the players to say yes to it in a vote. That's possible. I think it's interesting that the players, and there are players who are making very public noise disagreeing, including Richard Sherman, who's part of the Players Association, saying he doesn't agree to the deal that's been negotiated. I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It's possible that the Players Union has agreed to a deal that the players themselves aren't going to accept. I'm not sure what the next step is from there. I do know this. You have to be willing that the most significant improvements in player rights in pro sports have come from one of two things: competition or labor stoppages. Like, it's the willingness to stop working that has been responsible in large part for some of the things, the advances that have happened with baseball player unions and the solidarity that they've shown. Baseball players have a longer career, so I think that makes it a little bit easier. Their former economic system was, as the reserve clause and some of the things that were there, it was pretty hard to understand how owners were able to keep overall salaries down. The other part is competition. The NFL, the biggest improvement came when the USFL came along. Mm-hmm. If I was a player, if you're not going to get more increased revenue, should the franchise tag be eliminated? And I think that'll be something that players ask. Like, is it true unrestricted free agency? Okay, fine. We're not going to get a larger percentage. Should there be true unrestricted free agency? Because that would result in salaries going up. It's a very interesting question. I just know, as a worker, I'm always suspicious when the boss starts going, hey, hurry up, let's get this done. Everything's all right, right? Let's go. And we're like, wait. This is the one chance that you have to kind of change your working conditions.
It
for
is.
These players, it's for the rest of their career because it's 10 years.
But they're smart. They're smart here. I mean, they have checked the boxes on a lot of things that players want. And when you discussed the marijuana tests that aren't going to get suspensions anymore, no longer Goodell making these random decisions based off of the wheel of corporal punishment, and then on top of that, 4 extra jobs per team. But it all depends on that 17th game and potentially a 7th playoff team making it. And I wonder, especially when these players talk about player safety all the time, how willing they're going to be to accept that. But at the end of the day, I mean, the NFL has all the power. The NFL Players Association just doesn't have that much. He is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. We are going to Arizona next week for Mariners spring training. What do you got to know about this team going forward? We'll discuss that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to be in Arizona next week. Should be a blast. Opportunity to see the Mariners get ready. We spend a week down there. Talking to some of the players and Paul, you're going to get your baptism into Mariner baseball, which should be extremely fun. So I thought as a service announcement, we'd put together kind of for everybody the things that you need to know about the Mariners this season and what to expect.
Okay. Okay. This is good. This will get me started. Basically, I have resorted to flashcards, and I am actually like to get up to speed on the Mariners. I've been like, you know, testing myself over the last couple of days.
What sort of questions? Do you have any questions? I'll open it up to you to start with. Well, do you have anything you'd like to know?
I mean, to be honest, we know what's going to happen this year. We know they're not going to be good. We know also that they are going to be looking for ways to improve the roster going forward. So you got to look at who you have and if there's anyone on the roster right now that can potentially give you something in return that can continue to build up this awesome farm system of yours, or give you something that is actually maybe a project of sorts, but you feel really good about, that's been pitching at the major league level or playing at the major league level. And I think the easiest person to look at, especially with all of the unfortunate things happening with Mitch Haniger, is to look at Kyle Seager, who you would think would be able to get you something in return, though I know that there is a little bit of a difficult obstacle in the way of that.
I am convinced he will never be traded. Never.
Ever?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. We'll see. He's got his contract runs through next season, but there's a club option for 2022. So 3 years from now, it's a $15 million club option. And here's the trick is that if he's traded, that becomes guaranteed. So unless Seager were to waive that option and decide, yeah, I'll go play somewhere else and not have that kick in as a guarantee, which he would never do. Like they're not, and the Players Association would throw a fit if he did. It's a negotiated element of his contract. There's not going to be the possibility. He can't be traded in the sense that $15 million would have to be made up. Another team would have to want him so much to be able to pay $15 million more than he's scheduled to make from the Mariners, which, if they're being honest, they prefer that money go somewhere else right now. So it makes it very difficult to trade him.
So they wouldn't pay that money either, you think?
They would already have to pay. He's going to make $19 million this year and $18 million next year. If they were going to trade him right now, they would have to pick up some of that $37 million just to move him, just to get a marginal prospect back for him.
And so, that's what you think. It would only be a marginal prospect in return if this poison pill, if you will, wasn't in the way.
Yeah, even if the poison pill isn't there, they would still be paying money to get a marginal prospect.
Gotcha.
And now you would add $15 million on top of the money that they would have to cover on top of that to get the marginal prospect. And at some point you're like, is paying all that money to get not much in return worth opening? He's a valuable functional player. He should be. He's not blocking anybody right now. Are you better off eating that degree of money to move him just to get something marginal back? And the answer is no. So that's why I would say we'll talk about it. And maybe something happens if he gets really hot, but it's very unlikely. I have a hard time seeing Kyle Seager get traded.
Okay, so that was my first question. I'm feeling the same way as you just because of that poison pill element of his contract. Number two, okay, we know that at some point we're going to see Jared Kelenic, Julio Rodriguez, but we're not going to see them for a little bit of time. So what are the young players? Who are the young players that have been here with the Mariners for a little bit of time or maybe have just come back to the Mariners who need to work out? Like, you brought this guy in, and it's not that you are hoping for this person to work out. You need this person to actually turn into something relevant and that can stay on a major league roster.
Justice Sheffield and Yusei Kikuchi, two starting pitchers, neither of whom had what could be considered good seasons last year. Justice Sheffield was the player that was acquired, the main piece of the trade for James Paxton. Yusei Kikuchi was the guy that they were really excited to have a chance to get in the posting system from Japanese pro baseball. They're really excited about both of those players. Neither had a good year. In fact, Kikuchi, pretty much after the season, a couple weeks after the season was done, went back to work on his mechanics to try and make some changes. And Justice Sheffield, I'm convinced that Sheffield was one of the players that was most affected by the new baseball and the baseball that went out easier.
Interesting.
There were a couple, I think Edwin Diaz, who went to the Mets, I think he was affected by it too. And Justice Sheffield ended up, not only did he start in AAA, he ended up having to go backwards at one point and was down to AA. He wasn't pitching well in AAA. AAA was using the same baseball last year. both of those guys, I don't want to say they need to work out for the Mariners. We know where the Mariners' bats are coming from. We know where they're going to get the offense. We know that Kelenic is going to be up at some point this year. We know that Julio Rodriguez is probably maybe next year. But you certainly see those guys as two potential sort of franchise-changing type players. We know where their bats and the offense are going to come from. We don't know about the pitching. Logan Gilbert's a former first-round pick. George Kirby's another guy that they're pretty high on. But Justus Sheffield and Yusei Kikuchi, they really need to work out to be starting arms in this rotation if they're going to be good. And I think they're hoping to be good and relevant and, if not contending, being right there on the doorstep of a playoff spot next year. So they really need that. Those guys, those are two players you want to see take a step forward this year.
Do we have any idea what the baseball is going to be like this coming season, just given the fact that baseball owns Rawlings?
I don't know. It's you would think that they would want to go back. This is the number one question I would have. People have talked about wanting a more contact, more balls
in
play.
I miss, to be honest, contact hitting. I thought it was an art. I thought the hit and run was a thing of beauty. Maybe it's because that's the way that my high school team operated. My high school baseball team was the best team that we had at our high school. They were a fun team to watch. They were great at the hit and run. There was always action going on. I mean, it was actually an enjoyable watch. It's high school baseball I'm talking about here.
There's one way to do that, and it's to make the ball travel less. Make it not carry as far.
Gotcha.
Make home runs harder to hit, because right now players have made a calculated decision that the ability to hit a home run is worth increased spike numbers of strikeouts. That going the other way and settling for a single, you're better off trying for the home run. You're better off having an all or nothing approach to it. And it would take, I don't even know how significant the change would have to be. If you made home runs more difficult to hit, it would change that equation, and you would see more guys change their approach and stop going for all or nothing because they wouldn't be hitting the jackpot as often.
Gotcha. One last question. I was there for Kyle Lewis's first home run off of Trevor Bauer. Got me very excited. Maybe I'm his good luck charm. Who knows? I want to know if this guy's actually someone that we can put into the same kind of conversation as a Jared Kelenic and a Julio Rodriguez, or if this is just another guy.
That's a great question. And that's probably the number one thing that I'm interested in seeing next week when we go down there. Can Kyle Lewis be a star? When they picked him in the draft, which was 2016, when they drafted him, they thought he was a potential star. He suffered a terrible knee injury that year. And not only did it knock him out of that season, but limited him for a good chunk of the next year. I think they're trying to still figure out what is his trajectory. What is his ceiling? And it certainly, with three home runs in his first three games last year once he got to the big leagues, was a huge arrival. Can he be a star? If he is, that is going to accelerate. Then you're looking at having, add him to, once Kelenic and Rodriguez get there, you're looking at really sort of a jump start on that rebuilding process and jump starting the offense. Can he be a star? Certainly, you're tantalized by what he did to start last season. So we'll see that, and that'll be one of the first things that we look at next week. Coming up next is Blue 42. We've got Jake Heaps pinch hitting for the pinch hitter. That comes up next.